Pope Francis, the charismatic leader of the Roman Catholic Church, is demanding action to combat the threat of global warming. The Pope's encyclical, Laudato Si, framed climate change as an urgent and moral issue, and it drove conversations in and out of the Church. The Pope's environmental concerns go back a long way, according to the web manager for earthhealing.info. Earth Healing focuses on Catholic care for creation, and the manager says the pontiff visited the website before his election as pope. And the website's creator, Father Albert Fritsch, like the pope, is a Jesuit priest with training in chemistry. I spoke with Father Albert at the rectory of St. Elizabeth Parish in Ravenna, Kentucky, which is in one of the poorest counties in the U.S., not far from where he grew up on a farm.
Well, my father was an extremely good farmer, and we took these very poor farms and turned them into very productive landscape, even crushing our limestone rock, which was there, and spreading it out. And, of course, we had rotation of crops, tobacco, which was the normal crop, along with mixed corn, hay, and wheat. And that's what we grew on our farm, along with vegetables and fruits. And therefore, we were mostly self-sufficient. And we never sent anything outside the farm as waste. We fed foodstuffs that were left over to the hogs and the chickens. Everything was used up in our own area, what we had.
So you decided to leave the farm. Where did you go?
I went to college, went to Xavier in Cincinnati. It was a very good school, and I got an undergrad and a master's degree there in chemistry.
And you got a doctorate as well in chemistry?
Yes, I did, from Fordham, yes. And went on and did a postdoctorate at University of Texas.
So what got you interested in the priesthood?
Well, I saw people I really liked very much who were Jesuits. I also had a great problem with what chemistry usually involves, and that is to go to a commercial institution, work for a company. I didn't like the idea of that. Academics, well, that was good, but I was hoping to do something that would apply the great gifts that we have with chemistry for the betterment of society, especially for the poor.
So what was the draw of the priesthood? Now you have a doctorate in chemistry, yeah. You're concerned about how people use chemistry,
yes.
And you feel yourself being drawn to the priesthood and the Jesuit priesthood at that, I imagine.
Yeah. Well, it was to save our own souls, of course, is the first thing that we do it for, you know, but also immediately it is to help all other people in some way. And I didn't see that a lot of the people who were connected to career jobs and trying to make a lot of profit in the work in which they did, I didn't see that that was really the calling for what I was doing myself or for the field itself. I felt that science, if you look back upon it, a lot of people over a long period of history had contributed a lot to making chemistry what it was. And in seeing this, it struck me as here is a commons that we all have, but suddenly it's being picked up by some and used and made a fortune out of. And why should it? Because it was part of a commons that we all had.
Now, you finish up your doctorate,
yeah.
And you decide that you're going to, well, help people,
yeah.
And you start to do some rather practical environmental things. What kinds of things did you do?
Well, I began the work after my studies, and I was still at University of Texas, met a young fellow in a march that we were on, and he was going to work with Ralph Nader as one of his hot shots for the summer, you know. And I asked him, I said, I've been looking for something that would be more of a public interest field. Would you ask Ralph if we need somebody like that? So he did, came back the next week and said, yes, go and have a connection with him and see if you can work out something. We started there at the Center for the Study of Responsive Law in 1970, and the next year we set up Center for Science in the Public Interest with two other scientists who were working with Nader. And that field I stayed with in Washington for 7 years and then decided that we really needed a branch that came closer to the poor of the country. And so I had a Appalachia Science of Public Interest, which exists to this day. And so Ralph Nader has been very helpful to us in helping us get donations and things, even to this day. And so we've been friends ever since.
So you decided when you were in Washington you would come back to Appalachia, where you were born and raised.
Yeah.
To have a ministry here. Why?
Why did I come back? Well, one of the first grants that we had received was from Jay Rockefeller, who was then the treasurer over at West Virginia, and he asked us to work on some surface mine issues for the state of Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Kentucky, the different regulations related to them. And so from the beginning, I began to see that strip mining was really affecting the parts of Kentucky where I was from. And we did that type of work in Washington for a period of time. But we moved back because Washington, D.C. is surrounded by seven of the wealthier counties of the country. And yet, if we're going to make a simple lifestyle that people have to go to and live, we better go back to where the poor people are and see if the challenge can't be done there first. And that's why I came back.
So what was it like to come back here?
Well, people were interested in the fact that we were trying to do a simple place, and therefore we set up an appropriate technology center in South Central Kentucky. There we had compost toilets, and we started growing intensive gardens, organic ones, quite concerned about the forest itself, making sure it was being taken care of well. And got into some coal issues at the beginning, but moved on into solar. We had the first complete solar house in America. We were saying that it isn't that we were just attacking what was being done wrong, but we have to look forward to a new economy that would be a renewable energy one. And so for 25 years, I ran that center, and I thought that was enough time. So I've come to doing more pastoral work in two of the small parishes.
Why do you consider caring for the earth to be a moral and religious issue?
Because if we don't care for it, the vitality of the earth will be destroyed. This is the deepest of the pro-life issues. For if we don't have a living earth, we can't live on it ourselves. And so it's also got tremendous theological implications because we believe that Christ came to save the world. And what we have never considered is that we, as part of his body, are now asked to save the earth. He is our Redeemer, but we enter into the very act of redemption.
Why should Catholics in particular care about environmental stewardship?
Well, not just Catholic, but Christian people in general have been baptized in the Lord, and that means that just as Christ loved the whole of creation, we are people who are like him in every way, and therefore we imitate the Lord. And our love for nature and for God's creation comes from the very part of our following that we commit ourselves to.
Talk to me a bit about why this perspective of the earth is important.
It's very important because even though in the Acts of the Apostles, some of the very first communities brought together people who shared everything in need, the big trouble was in the last few centuries, we have had Marxism, which took some of the same ideas, really, and imposed it with an atheistic background to it. But in all actuality, the world is a commons. God created it for all of us. We have found in the course of history that more of us working together can take care of it better than individuals can. And so now when we move to a society in which an immense amount of wealth can come to a few in a very short period of time, it becomes imperative for us to bring again the idea that this is a commons, that we cannot have billionaires and destitute people at the same time. It's a poor community because commons means that we share together. And if people can't share, but instead they sequester, they take everything to themselves and hold on to it while others don't have enough, this destroys our society.
How did you feel when you heard about the Pope's encyclical on the environment?
At first, to be honest with you, I was nervous, thinking that, well, he might not say enough. You know, the Pope is a very busy man. How could you write a 100-page, 40,000-word document when you're doing everything that he's doing? But really, when I look at his philosophy, it's exactly the same as mine. I've read that encyclical, and I would not disagree with a single point on it. I may have arranged it a little differently because it's a very long document, longest encyclical ever written. But at the same time, I think that everything that it says is good. But it also adds a burden. We've now got a duty to spread the word as much as we can. This is talking about the needs that we have on Earth and that we have a good tradition in his second chapter from our biblical tradition that we should do something about it. And it's been misinterpreted, especially by those who want to make a little fortune and thinking that we could subjugate other people, you know. But the fact is that the time has come for us to share as a people in the world, not to look at ourselves as elite or different from others, but that we are together with others.
Tell me about your own parish's response to the Pope's encyclical.
Well, they all liked the idea. In fact, the person that called me a communist walked out one time. Not only did he come back, but he was the one that asked that we do something about this. And my feeling is that a lot of people who are climate change deniers are really honest and good people. They don't realize what is happening. And therefore, I feel like a special attention must be given with a certain amount of mercy, we might say, and care for those who have a difficult feeling that we have to change the status quo, which they've gotten some good out of in the past. If we combine a sense of mercy and pastoral care with a sense that we've got to change together, I think we can do more. And I think this applies not only here, but I really think most of my writing is directed because, see, I'm a social conservative and I'm a fiscal conservative. But on political matters, I differ. But I believe I call myself a true conservative because I believe it goes back beyond the capitalistic system. And it has to include things which are far more sharing in our past than what we have today. And therefore, if I can bring that point out to people, that they can break from their politicization, you might say, or the partisanization of these issues, which when I started to work, the Republicans and Democrats were all together, 1970 to 80s. I'd like to get back to that and get away from the idea that this is a political issue. This is something far deeper than that. It is a moral issue of which we all share.
Let's see here. You gave me a bit of a handout describing each of the chapters of the Pope's encyclical. I gather you're sharing this with your congregation.
Yes, it is, yes.
This is quite detailed, and you have, at one point, 10 American applications of the encyclical. Yes. So let's just briefly describe them. The first one is to read the encyclical.
Check on the need for personal and domestic conversion. And conversion is the second big point. We have to convert ourselves from what we've been thinking in order to save our earth. We just cannot save it by some of the ways that we've had in the past. The third is to organize and attend meetings in church gatherings. And of course, that's why we're setting up one. And this is a document that I'm sending out on our website. Climate change deniers hold that, well, it's still a battle going on. There's still people that deny it. Well, our answer is that that is a situation they're trying to set up in order to prolong the profit motivation that is accomplishing for the big energies, that is the fossil fuel ones, profits that will last just like they did in the past on the tobacco issue. Tobacco areas were really scientifically concluded back in the 60s that there was something really wrong with smoking tobacco. And what happened in between almost 40 years, it was always saying that there is some denial occurring. The merchants were denying it, and therefore they were holding back from having regulations. We are having the same thing happen in fossil fuel. The difference is there, well, it shortened the lives of about 3 million people. But here we're talking about the very vitality of the earth itself.
So this is the fourth point, to talk to people, those who regard themselves as climate change deniers. Now, what about your last call here?
The last call is the fact that not every Catholic likes what the Pope wrote, and we don't know how many there are out there. The possibility is half of them in this country. We have far more deniers, climate change deniers in this country than they have in other parts of the world. The great possibility is many of them will do what some of our presidential candidates who are Catholic say, and that is that this is beyond the Pope's expertise. But the answer is, oh no, this is a moral issue, and that's exactly where he needs to be and must stand there. And we have to face the fact that we have to convert and have to proselytize, you might say, our own people to listen to what the Pope has to say and not just dismiss it, because it's extremely important. And they've got to talk about it within their family, within their church communities. And we are hoping that other parishes begin to talk among themselves in an honest way about how we all have got to change our lives in order to save our earth.
Father Albert Fritsch is the rector of St. Elizabeth's here in Ravenna, Kentucky. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you.